He got up and gestured out at the white sky and the bare expanse of the moors, now pockmarked with last night's melting snow. You're as bad as Annabelle. Grace went across to the worktop and poured her sister a drink. Tell you what, let's go for a walk while the weather holds. See if we can get you two city slickers to actually enjoy a bit of fresh air. Whatever, Annabelle murmured, leafing through a magazine as she accepted the mug Grace handed to her. James winked at Grace. Good plan. She smiled back at him, but faltered for a moment at the expression in his eyes before he looked away. Chapter 18. As Grace strapped Millie into her stroller, she listened to Annabelle and James on the doorstep, both complaining about being outside in the bitter cold.
Are you sure this is a good idea?
Annabelle asked doubtfully, rubbing her arms with her gloved hands. It's only a walk, Annabelle, it won't kill you, Grace retorted, surprising herself. In London, she had regularly grumbled about the distances between bus, tube, and destination. But now she found herself looking forward to these long countryside rambles. Come on. She pushed Millie's stroller towards the gate, the others falling in step behind her. To reach the moorland path, they headed up the steep road past the other cottages.
Who lives in these places?
James asked, breaking the hush of the frosty morning. Grace looked across at the row of cottages as she replied,
Emma and Carla next door to me. They're lovely. Apparently an old man called Feathery Jack lives in that one.
She pointed to the cottage with smoke rising from the chimney. But he's reclusive by all accounts. I've never seen him. And Ben lives at the house at the top. She motioned towards the red brick dwelling standing incongruously beside its stone neighbours.
Feathery Jack?
Annabelle repeated.
What's that about?
He keeps birds, apparently. Owls.
That's actually pretty cool, James said.
Annabelle raised an eyebrow at him. They continued walking in silence, following the tarmacked road to the summit, leaving the houses behind. At the top, they turned down a path marked only by flattened grass and occasional groups of uneven stones. They made their way until they reached another peak, and as they crested the hill, the moors spread out before them.
There's not a lot of green about, is there? James said.
That's because it's winter,
Grace snapped, lifting Millie out of her stroller and hoisting her onto her shoulders so she could take in the view. Here, she instructed the others. Before you both start gabbling away, shut up for a moment and look at this place, will you? And breathe it in. It might be deserted, but it's absolutely pristine. Annabelle glanced across at Grace and tutted, but then did as requested. James turned obediently, but with his arms folded, as though he doubted he'd be impressed. Grace surveyed the desolate expanse, mottled with melting snow, wondering why she'd felt so defensive when James had spoken. There was something beautiful about this place, she thought. In daylight, the raw, untouched vista had the power to stop your mind for a moment. Here, you didn't have to look up to see the sky. It came right down and met you, ever present beyond the ceaseless shifting of colour, clouds, and light. Briefly, the void inside her was filled with something close to peace. She remembered standing in a similar spot with Adam, holding hands, their tiny daughter in a sling against her chest. She recalled the sense of belonging she had felt, the contentment in Adam's face. Even though he wasn't here, this place linked them. So should she indulge her occasional crazy notions about staying here and trying to carve out a life for herself once the cottage was renovated? Of course not, she told herself hastily. She was a city girl. But she was all too aware that she had never known London as a single mother, and she wasn't daft enough to think it would be the same for her now. So what choices did she have? She sighed. Nothing much was clear to her at the moment,
nothing except Millie's mittened hands clutching her mother's ponytail. When she looked at her daughter, she felt a resolve of purpose beyond herself, and at present that was enough to keep her going when everything else seemed so uncertain. She let her thoughts drift away, coming back to her surroundings. The chilly air filled her nostrils, fresh and slightly sweet. As she breathed in, a gust of cold wind nipped at her face, setting her teeth on edge.
"It is beautiful, in a rugged, remote sort of way," Annabel said, breaking the spell. "But still, you shouldn't hide out here for too long, Grace."
Grace felt stung by the remark.
"I'm not hiding, Annabel. I'm doing what needs to be done."
Annabel and James caught each other's eyes, and Grace had to breathe deeply to stop herself from yelling at them. She put Millie back in her stroller, then barked, "This way," and walked off without checking to see if they were coming with her. No one spoke as they followed the rough stone path, the fresh, clean air rolling over the hills and bursting into their faces. The wind was a puppeteer, bending the trees to its will and making the dead leaves and twigs dance and scuttle along the ground away from them. Grace tried to concentrate on pushing Millie along the rocky path, but her mind insisted on drifting back to what Annabel had just said. Was she hiding? Was that really why she had come back? She attempted to distract herself, watching a flock of field fares dart overhead, and Millie shrieked with delight as they spooked a grouse into noisy flight. But for the most part, there was nothing except a glorious expanse of nature at its barest, and for Grace, the solitude and silence were settling. Out here, she didn't feel so lost, or overwhelmed, or alone. They reached a patch of open ground with a cluster of large flat boulders, which overlooked the train line that followed the curves of the valley. As they slowed, Annabel cried,
"Oh my God, that's Lover's Leap!"
She pointed to a place a little farther on, where the rail track crossed a steel bridge suspended above a small gorge, partially hidden from view.
"I read about it in your book, Grace, and Ben mentioned it as well. It's probably the most haunted place in the area. People have been going over the edge since time began, apparently, usually because of unrequited love."
James shook his head. "Love makes people do the strangest things," he said, gazing into the distance. Grace couldn't bear this conversation.
"Can we keep going?"
she asked them, hurriedly getting up. The other two got to their feet and followed her. Grace tried to imagine Ben telling Annabel stories of the moors, unable to picture him conversing so freely. Then her mind switched back to Adam, wandering along this same track with her, his arm slung over her shoulders as he told her about his plans for the cottage, for their new life. All at once, she couldn't bear her constant reminiscing. She stopped and swung round, startling James and Annabel.
"Where the hell is he?" she cried. "What happened? I mean, he wouldn't just disappear, and he wasn't the kind to jump off cliffs."
She glared at them, hands on hips, demanding that one of them answer her.
"He might still come back,"
Annabel said uncertainly.
"Why the hell would you say that?"
Grace shouted. She caught Millie's eye, and as she registered her daughter's alarm, she made an effort to calm herself down.
"Don't you see? I can't think like that anymore. Because how long am I meant to wait? There are no rules as far as I can see. What's the proper time for this? 2 years? 5? 10? I could spend the rest of my life waiting. What kind of miserable existence is that?"
There was silence. Then James said,
"Grace, I'm not sure that staying here is good for you if it's making you feel like this."
Grace threw her hands in the air.
"I know that, James. But what choice do I have? I have no major assets, except a damned cottage I can't sell. And I have to sort everything out properly for Millie's sake.
Adam did care about his daughter, whatever anyone says. And I want her at least to have some things of her father's to remember him by. And that's as far as I can think about it without going crazy. Annabel came over and began to rub Grace's arm. Let's not talk about it anymore. Let's help you do what you need to and try to enjoy Christmas. Time to move on, eh?
Grace saw that Annabel was upset now. Her sister's heartfelt sympathy took the fight out of her, and she buried her face in her hands.
I miss him, she said, confused and defeated, feeling her eyes filling with tears.
At which point James and Annabel both wrapped their arms around her, taking her weight, even if only for a moment. Chapter 19. Millie sat on her mother's lap as Grace turned the pages of a book and pointed to the pictures. Her mood was low, and she wondered if it would have been better had they gone to town with James and Annabel. But she needed to stop for a while and rest, particularly as she was heading out this evening. And she also wanted to spend some proper time with Millie. Grace knew she was physically meeting her daughter's needs, but her mind was often elsewhere. And meanwhile, Millie grew and changed every day. Grace wanted to absorb as much of this sweet little toddler as she could. As she closed the book, there was an unexpected knock on the door. She jumped, startling Millie.
Who's that?
Grace asked, as Millie stared impassively at her. She set the little girl on the floor with the book and went to find out. Opening the door, she was greeted by a Christmas tree standing alone in front of her, its branches flailing in the wind.
Did you knock?
She asked the tree, then couldn't help chuckling to herself.
Yes, we did.
Ben peeped around from behind it. I thought you might like this. If you don't want it, I'll put it up instead. But I think it would go better in here. And I heard that you'd knocked down a wall to make room for it.
Grace beamed at him.
That's a great idea. Thank you. She stood back as Ben lifted the tree and swung it over the threshold, pushing it towards the front room. Millie looked up in awe, and Grace went to pick her up, while Ben asked, Where'd you want it?
There is fine.
Grace pointed towards a bare corner, and Ben maneuvered it into place.
It's a shame I don't have any decorations for it, though.
Ben dusted off his hands as he studied the bare branches.
Are you sure you don't?
He asked.
You've got a lot of boxes in this place. Perhaps one of them has Christmas stuff in it.
You're right, she said, as she cuddled Millie. I'll have a look in the tops of them, see if I can find anything. I don't think they'd have been in the attic, but perhaps there might be something in the cellar.
They walked through the hallway to the cellar door.
Do you want me to take a look?
Ben offered.
Yes, please, she thought.
But she steeled herself, not wanting to look wimpish.
No, it's fine. I know where the light switch is now.
Shall I take Millie for you then?
You can try, Grace replied, not really anticipating that Millie would allow it. But to her astonishment, the little girl went willingly to Ben.
Right then, she said, ruffling her daughter's hair. I won't be a moment.
She made her way down the steps. At the bottom, she felt along the wall for the light switch and flicked it on. The place still depressed her, with its piles of debris and stacks of boxes, but she began to hunt around. It was so cold down here. Everything she touched was icy, and Grace felt the chill creeping up her fingers and beginning to crawl along her arms. She came across Adam's mementos again and remembered that he had brought them down here, unbeknownst to her. After what had happened last time, she found herself reluctant to touch them, but she briefly hunted through. There was nothing surprising, just a jumble of souvenirs.
Any luck? Ben called.
She was aware of him waiting. Turning away, she spotted tinsel poking from the top of a small box.
I've got something, she called, as she pulled it from the shelf, finding it was lighter than she'd expected. There was no reply from Ben as Grace went across to the stairs. She switched off the light and headed up, holding the box awkwardly in front of her and navigating by the strip of illumination coming through the doorway at the top. Suddenly, the door slammed shut with a loud bang, and she was plunged into blackness. Shock made her drop the box, and she heard it tumbling away down the stairs. Panic seized her, and she scrambled blindly up the rest of the steps until she felt the wood of the door solid against her palms. She pushed hard, but it didn't move. She began to hammer on it with her fists until it swung open. Ben and Millie stared worriedly at her frightened face. "Grace, you all right?" Ben asked as Millie reached out for her. She clutched the doorframe as she gulped in air. "I'm fine," she said, taking Millie. "The door slammed and gave me a fright."
"Sorry,"
Ben sounded contrite. "I'd taken Millie outside to say aye to Bess, and I heard the bang. The draft must have blown it closed." He noticed her empty hands.
"You didn't find anything?"
"There's a Christmas box, but I dropped it." She wavered, reluctant to go down there again.
"I'll get it."
Ben headed down into the darkness. Grace stroked Millie's hair while they waited, saying, "Mummy got a fright, but it's fine now," as Millie clung tightly to her. A moment later, Ben reappeared.
"Here you go,"
he said, carrying the box through to the living room. He set it down on the floor and stood up, dusting off his hands. He was getting ready to leave, and Grace realized how much she didn't want to be alone. "Would you like to stay while we decorate the tree?" she asked. "I have beer." Ben smiled.
"That would be good, but I don't want to leave Bess out in this weather for too long."
"Bring her in then."
"Are you sure?"
"Of course." Ben went to the front door, and a moment later Bess bounded inside and began sniffing at everything in sight. To Grace's surprise, Millie struggled to be free, and once on the ground the little girl gawked at the dog in amazement and even chuckled briefly when Bess licked her face. Grace knelt down and patted Bess, feeling herself warming to the dog. She couldn't be too nervous of an animal that could make her daughter giggle like that. When Annabelle and James arrived home, they found Bess curled up in front of the fireplace, looking on as Grace and Ben put the final touches to the Christmas tree. Millie sat beside them, playing with an assortment of baubles that she had commandeered.
"What are you doing here, Ben?"
Annabelle asked as she began pulling off her gloves.
"You told me you didn't have a Christmas tree," he said, "so I brought you one."
Grace felt her face fall as she saw Annabelle's light up. She'd thought the tree was for Millie's benefit. "Why do I care?" she asked herself as she began to help them with the bags.
"I think we've got enough food to feed the whole village,"
Annabelle announced as she went across to give Bess a stroke.
"You should have seen the town, Grace. It was like one of those old world postcards. The market was on a cobbled street. Everyone was wearing Christmas hats. And all the shops were decorated with multicoloured twinkling lights and streams of tinsel."
As she listened, Grace noticed that the two men were eyeing each other, waiting for introductions. "James, this is Ben." They shook hands.
"Been hearing a lot about you,"
James said.
"Oh?"
Ben looked wary. James smiled.
"All good, don't worry. Annabelle's been telling me about your day trips. Local, are you?" "Used to be."
Ben went across to get his coat.
"Not lived here for a long time now, but I know some of the old stories."
"Are you coming to the ball tonight?"
"No."
Ben shook his head.
"Not my thing."
"Come on, Bess." The dog sprang to her feet.
"I'll see you all tomorrow then."
Ben looked around the room at them before he turned to leave. Grace went to see him out. She wished he were coming to the ball.
She enjoyed his unobtrusive company and wanted to get to know him better.
Thanks again for the tree,
she called after him belatedly as he neared the gate, with Bess trotting behind him. He didn't turn, just waved a hand in reply. Chapter 20. Freeborough Hall loomed sturdy and imposing at the end of a long circular driveway, lights blazing from the downstairs rooms. Grace grasped the skirt of her long black satin dress so that it wouldn't trail along the wet ground, and headed towards the ornate doorway with the others. Annabel had borrowed a sparkly silver number that Grace hadn't worn in years, while James had managed to rent a tuxedo in town. He fiddled with his cufflinks as they made their way up the steps. At the top, they were greeted by two elderly women, in similar royal blue knee-length dresses that looked more appropriate for church than for a ball. After parting with their tickets and entering the raffle, they headed along a wide corridor in the direction of voices and music.
"Look at these," James said, as he glanced up at the large disembodied head of a stag, its beady eyes glaring malevolently down at them,
one of a number of animal trophies that were mounted between various works of art.
"I'd rather not, thanks,"
Annabel replied. They entered the large function room to see the party in full swing. Multicoloured balloons were bunched at regular intervals around the wall, streamers trailing from them. The stage and the bar area were well lit, but the rest of the light came from small lamps on each table. People milled around, or sat in groups holding animated conversation, while a few had already taken to the floor, dancing to a swing band. Grace glanced at the double bass player, his eyes closed as he plucked fiercely at strings, and wondered what it would be like to be that absorbed in something. When was the last time she had lost herself like that? She couldn't remember.
"Where the hell did all these people come from?"
James murmured. They bought drinks and found an empty table, but it didn't take long before Annabel began cajoling them all to dance.
"All right then,"
James muttered crossly as Annabel pulled him from his seat.
"Come on, Grace, you too."
But Grace shook her head as they got up and moved to the dance floor, and after a few attempts at waving her over to join them, James gave up. Annabel began sashaying around with her arms in the air, while James did his best impression of a swing king, leaning forward and clicking his fingers to each side of his knees, nodding his head enthusiastically. Grace was laughing at them when she heard someone saying her name and felt a hand on her shoulder. She swung around to see Claire.
"Hi, Grace."
Claire was smiling.
"My family are over there. Come and say hello."
Grace got up and followed Claire across the room to a large round table.
"Everyone,"
Claire announced.
"This is Grace."
Conversation drifted away as all eyes fell on her. On the far side, a burly, shaved-headed man had his hand placed proprietorially on the thigh of the woman next to him. The woman was observing the dance floor, and Grace saw that she had a pretty elfin face and dark hair piled high on top of her head. Nearest to Grace, a woman with long auburn hair had turned to stare, her face somber. Last of all, Grace spotted Meredith in a dim corner close to the wall, one elbow on the table, the heel of her palm elegantly propping up her chin as she coolly regarded the dance floor.
"These are my younger sisters, Liza and Jenny,"
Claire said, gesturing to the women as she spoke.
"And over there is Liza's husband, Dan."
"Hello, Grace,"
Meredith said from her shadowy corner, her mouth barely moving.
"Claire, can I talk to you for a moment?"
Claire moved across to her mother, leaving Grace on her own. As she looked around, her gaze fell on Jenny, whose long red hair was familiar. Then she realized this was the person she had seen leaving Ben's house when she'd been out walking. Perhaps Ben was the someone Claire had referred to when she had said Jenny was in a new relationship. She realized too late that she was staring, and Jenny was regarding her with a frown. Grace averted her eyes, Dan got up and held out a hand.
Nice to meet you, he said without smiling as they shook. So you're living in Roseby? Claire said you're from London. The change of scene must have taken a bit of getting used to.
Yes, it has. She shook his hand, expecting more conversation, but he sat down and began rolling a cigarette. Grace remembered Emma telling her about him and tried to picture him as a policeman. His manner was both abrupt and slightly menacing, and she was grateful that it was Niall and not this man who'd been sent to help her on the night Adam disappeared.
How are you getting on at the cottage?
Liza asked.
Mum says you're busy sorting through everything.
Grace wondered if they knew about Meredith's interest in the place.
Yes, but I'm enjoying the break for Christmas.
Before Liza could say any more, Jenny leaned across the table and said something to Dan. He looked down at the tablecloth and let out a short bark of laughter, and Grace saw Jenny's eyes flicker to her, then away. Grace began to feel uneasy, but was saved as the music stopped and it was announced that the raffle was about to be drawn.
Good to meet you all, she said, glancing around to find Meredith's eyes fixed on her.
Claire began to move towards her again, but Grace pretended she hadn't seen and hurried away. Annabel and James were already back at their table.
Where did you go?
Annabel asked accusingly.
You left my purse on the chair. It could have been stolen.
I'm not here to babysit your handbag, Grace retorted. Look after it yourself.
All right, calm down,
Annabel glared at her. Their attention shifted towards the stage as the raffle was drawn. Grace glanced at her tickets, then screwed them up. Then the lights were dimmed again. The music resumed, and everyone went back to their conversations. Trying her best to absorb the carefree atmosphere, for a while Grace chatted inconsequentially to Annabel and James over another glass of wine. But she felt as though she were alone in an invisible bubble.
Time for another dance,
Annabel announced a little while later, and James agreed, saying,
This time you're coming too, Grace.
But dancing was a step too far for her tonight, in front of all these people, particularly when she couldn't shake the feeling that she was being watched. She decided she would go for a walk rather than sit by herself next to the packed dance floor. She thought she might find a moment's solitude in the ladies' bathroom, but when she arrived, there was a queue of women gossiping animatedly while they waited for a cubicle. So she headed back beneath the leering parade of hunting trophies towards the main doors of the building. The old women who had welcomed them were no longer there, and she leaned against the cool stone wall, breathing in the frigid air, feeling the chill of the night seeping through her skin and into her bones.
Grace,
a female voice said. Grace whirled around. One of Meredith's daughters was standing behind her, contemplating Grace nervously.
Liza, isn't it?
Grace asked.
Yes,
the woman replied, a small jewel in her brown hair glinting in the soft light.
I need to talk to you, alone. It's about Adam.
Chapter 21. As Grace stared at Liza, she noticed that Liza's stomach protruded in front of her, like a perfectly rounded egg. Grace's whole body had stiffened upon hearing Adam's name, but before she could speak, Liza said,
This way,
and headed down the steps. At the bottom, she glanced back and beckoned Grace to come with her. Grace followed in a daze, as Liza made for two soaring oak trees whose trunks stood set apart, but whose branch tips bent to join each other in a delicate embrace. There wasn't much light to navigate by, but between what little moonlight had managed to penetrate the clouds and the glow from the hall, Grace could make out a small lake in front of her. Liza had turned right and disappeared, and as Grace came through the trees, she saw there was an ornamental gazebo a little farther along. Creeping plants had spun a web of stems over the wrought iron railings, and there were a few steps leading into it. Liza waited inside, looking out across the lake.
As soon as Grace joined her, she said, I'm sorry to bring you out here like this, but I didn't know how else to speak to you on your own, and I need to tell you something.
She searched Grace's face for reassurance.
I'm listening,
Grace told her quietly. Liza took a deep breath before she spoke.
I saw Adam in the library, in Octon, the day before he went missing. I nipped in there to browse while I waited for a bus, and I was amazed to bump into him. We recognised each other straight away, even though it's been, what, over 14 years. But during the summer he spent in Roseby, my sisters and I saw him all the time. He made life far more interesting for a while, I can tell you. Anyway, it was really lovely to catch up. He told me about you, Grace. Said he was married and had a baby girl. He looked really proud.
Grace felt a searing pain in her chest. She went across and leaned on the railing, studying the ink-black lake. Patchy light illuminated small parts of its glassy surface and highlighted the dark outlines of plants and bushes surrounding it. Liza came closer and put a hand on her arm.
I'm sorry, Grace. I can only imagine how difficult it must be.
Why the hell didn't you come forward at the time?
Grace interrupted, anger sitting low in her voice.
I didn't know that Adam had gone missing right away,
Liza explained, withdrawing her touch.
And when I found out, it was complicated, for reasons I don't want to go into, but which have nothing to do with Adam. Anyway, at the time I didn't think our conversation would be relevant, but when I heard you were back, I knew I should talk to you, just in case.
What else did he say?
Grace demanded impatiently.
Well, he was sitting at a computer when I saw him, with the phone book open next to him. And when I asked him what he was doing, he looked kind of sheepish and said, looking for my dad.
On hearing those last four words, Grace froze. Liza didn't notice and carried on.
I was taken aback by that. When he'd stayed in Roseby after his mother died, the main things I remember about him were first of all that he pretty much chain-smoked, and secondly, that he talked a lot about how much he hated his father for abandoning them. So I wasn't sure what to say. But he added, I'd just like to hear his side of the story. And then I'm certain that we began talking about something else. That's all I remember him saying about it anyway. But I recall him telling me that very clearly, because he'd obviously had such a big change of heart.
Grace was trying to imagine this conversation taking place.
Adam rarely talked about his father to me,
she told Liza.
He seemed to have dealt with the trauma of his early life. He was one for always looking forward, not backwards.
Well,
Liza said,
he had changed then, because he used to be obsessed with his dad. And that's probably a good thing, actually, because although I didn't really understand at the time, it wasn't very healthy the way he talked then. But he had only just lost his mother. He needed someone to direct his anger at, I guess. The way he spoke in the library struck me, because that hate wasn't there anymore. He was quite matter-of-fact about it.
Grace swung round. I want to tell the police about this, she said. In case it makes a difference. I wish you'd said something at the time.
Chris, I understand how you must feel, but I'm asking you, begging you in fact, not to get me involved.
Liza sounded frightened. Can I ask why? Grace persisted. Liza shook her head.
I can't say. I'm sorry. Please, I've told you all I know. Leave me out of it now.
Grace made a noise of frustration and looked back across the lake for a while, lost in thought. When she turned round, she was alone in the gazebo. All at once, the cold was unbearable. She looked through the trees towards the lights of the hall. She wasn't ready to go back there yet. Her thoughts tumbled over one another as she tried to make sense of what she had heard. While Liza had been talking, half of Grace had been listening attentively.
but the other half had been picturing Adam's earnest face and trying to figure out why he hadn't told her what he was doing. She had a disconcerting feeling that she might know the answer. While Grace was pregnant, she had asked Adam if he'd thought about tracing his father. He had seemed agitated by the suggestion and had given her a big speech about how the past was best left alone. If he'd changed his mind and decided to do some research while they were at the cottage, he might well have put off telling Grace, knowing what he'd said before, reluctant to admit his change of heart. She remembered his note now, with a shudder of disquiet. "I have to talk to you when I get back. Don't go anywhere." As she sighed, a cloud of mist formed in the frosty air. Surely this was it. He had meant to tell her about Johnny. So why had he chosen that moment? Had he found something in the library? She watched her breath dissipating. This was all supposition. Who knew if it even had any bearing on why he'd disappeared? She recalled Liza and her family at the table tonight. Meredith's indifferent stare. Perhaps they were trying to unnerve her, make her feel that her husband had been keeping secrets from her, maneuver her out of the cottage so Meredith could take it over. Well, if that were their intention, they were going to be disappointed. It was time to get back inside before she caught pneumonia. She left the gazebo and moved hurriedly along, careful not to trip on the long undergrowth next to the murky water. As she walked through the car park, she pictured Millie's sleeping face and rummaged in her small bag to phone Emma. "I've been expecting you to call," Emma said as she answered. "And she's fine, not a peep out of her. Enjoy yourself while you've got the chance. I'm not expecting you back until way past midnight." "Thank you. I really appreciate it," Grace said. "Don't you worry. I'm sure we'll be needing a favour from you at some stage." As Grace hung up, she registered the sounds of the ball again and wondered if James and Annabelle had realised that she was missing. "Annabelle probably won't even notice if I'm not in the car on the way home," she thought, since she's likely to be both drunk and exhausted by then. Grace's mother had always urged her to be a responsible older sister and look after Annabelle, even though they were only 13 months apart. She had once done so willingly. Yet nowadays, at times, she resented her sister's devil-may-care approach to life.
"Grace was born responsible,"
her father used to say proudly, and so it appeared. Was this what she was doing now, by moving back to the cottage? Putting herself through all this because of some questionable notion about what the right thing to do might be. What if she didn't want to be responsible anymore? Perhaps that should be her New Year's resolution, she decided, with a surge of defiance. There was an unexpected movement behind her. She whirled around, peering back towards the trees, and saw a familiar figure vanishing behind one of them. A tall man with dark hair. She shook her head briefly to try to re-establish reality, but it was no use. That short glimpse had stung her so hard that she broke into a run, screaming as loudly as she could, "Adam!" Chapter 22. At the sound of her cry, the man spun on his heel.
"Grace,"
Ben said, a mixture of astonishment and worry on his face.
"What are you doing out here?"
For a moment she had imagined it was her husband, and nothing else had mattered except catching up to him. Now, bitter disappointment derailed her.
"Why the hell are you creeping around?" she shouted.
Ben appeared to wince at her loud voice and glanced uncomfortably towards the trees and the car park and hall beyond. But there was no one visible, only the faint sound of music.
"Grace, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to scare you. I didn't know anyone else was down here."
"But what are you doing here?"
she demanded, still angry.
You said you weren't coming.
Well, I changed my mind. A few times, actually. I was wondering if this might be...
He stopped, as though reluctant to go on.
Be what?
Grace insisted. Ben shook his head.
Never mind, it doesn't matter.
He came closer.
Here.
He took off his jacket and held it up to drape over her shoulders.
You must be freezing.
Grace became aware of how tightly she had wrapped her arms around herself and how hard she was shaking. She let him lay the jacket over her, and as the fight left her, tears began to form in her eyes. She looked down.
You should go back inside, Grace, where it's warm.
She kept her focus on the ground. I'd rather not, for a minute.
All right, then. Come and sit in my car for a while and get warm.
He led the way to the Land Rover, slivers of light from the hall reflecting off the bonnet. Grace climbed into the passenger seat and laid her head back against the headrest, while Ben got into the driver's seat and started the engine.
Where are we going?
Grace asked, alarmed as the doors automatically locked with a loud click.
Nowhere,
Ben said.
I was just switching on the engine to get the heat coming through properly.
Grace looked at the bright lights of the hall and pictured the cheerful celebrations inside. Right at this moment, she wanted to be far away from it all.
Actually, can you take us for a drive?
Ben didn't say another word, but put the car into gear and began to reverse. Once they were heading slowly down the gravel driveway, Grace nestled into her seat. The silken lining of Ben's jacket was soft against her arms, and she pulled it closer around her, breathing in the unfamiliar scent of his aftershave on the lapels. The dark sky formed a backdrop to the sable silhouettes of trees as they sped along. Nightfall made everything an illusion. The small red and blue lights on Ben's dashboard were comforting, reassuring little beacons of safety, the car their small enclave on the unfamiliar roads. She roused herself as Ben slowed, to find that they were caught in a traffic jam.
What's going on?
She asked, intrigued.
They're heading for midnight mass.
Grace looked towards the church in the distance, then at the cars pulling up. I've never been, she said. Have you?
Would you like to go now?
Grace considered the unexpected offer. Yes. Ben pulled to the curb without a word. They got out of the car and made their way through a small lych gate, then along the churchyard path towards the bright, welcoming light. Grace hadn't been to a church service since she was a child. Her parents used to attend every week, until her father had found a new religion called golf. They slid into an empty pew at the back, and Grace looked around. The church was long and thin, with an ornate high ceiling. The organ droned in the background as the congregation filed in, then struck up with a renewed vigour as the clergy proceeded slowly down the aisle. When the service began, Grace let the words wash over her, the vicar's voice rising and falling in prayer. When she was asked to kneel, she pressed her face against her hands and let her tears come in silent relief, acknowledging how helpless she felt and sending out a plea that the coming year would be brighter and happier for Millie and for herself. When the service ended, she felt lighter. She hadn't so much as looked at Ben since entering the church, but now, as people began to wish one another a Merry Christmas, he turned to her with a smile.
Happy Christmas, Grace.
She smiled in reply, enjoying the snatched moment of tranquility. Then she glanced at her watch.
Oh no, I've got to get back. Annabelle and James will be going mad, and I need to get home for Millie.
The ball doesn't finish until one,
Ben reassured her.
They might not have even registered that you've gone.
but Grace had no doubt that they would have noticed by now.
Can we go quickly?
She asked, as they hurried out of the church, saying a brief Merry Christmas to the vicar before rushing back to Ben's car. Ben unlocked the doors as he went swiftly around to the driver's side.
Don't panic, Grace. We'll be there in 10 minutes,
he said as they climbed inside. During the journey, Grace jiggled her knees up and down impatiently, but as they came onto the long gravel drive, she was distracted from her worry as Ben said,
Look, why don't I leave you all to have Christmas dinner on your own? I don't want to intrude.
Ben, you're not intruding. Really? Grace insisted, keen for him to come after he had been so gently supportive of her tonight.
We'd love to have you. Annabelle will grumble all day if you back out now. Well, all right, if you're sure.
For some reason, his detachment infuriated her, and she twisted in her seat to face him. Ben, why are you house-sitting in the middle of nowhere on your own? What's going on? Jenny's wary face and long auburn hair flashed through her mind. What role did that woman play in his life? Ben lapsed into silence for a long moment, his features grim, before he said,
I have some unfinished business, like you.
You skirt around giving straight answers every single time. Do you realize that? Grace demanded, irritated. She saw his jaw tighten.
Grace, I can assure you, this is not a Christmas Day kind of conversation.
She sat back in her seat with an exasperated sigh, unable to think of a reply. When they reached the end of the drive, instead of going right to the car park, Ben pulled up on the grass beforehand.
Will you be all right from here?
He asked.
Yes, of course, she said, puzzled.
But before she could turn away, he slowly leaned towards her, and she felt her heartbeat skitter as his face drew close to hers. She smelled his aftershave again, studied the taut line of his jaw, and when his face was almost touching hers, she looked into his eyes. He was watching her curiously. She had forgotten to breathe. Then she heard the latch of her door as he opened it for her, and he straightened back up into his seat, even though he was still scrutinizing her.
Ben, Grace began, as she let go of her breath, forgetting that anyone was waiting for her now. She sensed she might not get another chance at such intimacy with him.
You can trust me, you know. Ben leaned back, staring at the car roof.
I know, he said. I know that, Grace. I just don't want you to think.
He stopped, apparently lost for the next words. Then he turned to face her.
I left here under a cloud, Grace. A very, very black cloud.
Even so, can't you come and join the final hour of the party? She urged, giving his sleeve a small tug of encouragement. Have a drink for Christmas. Forget your troubles for a little while. You can stick with us, she added, in case he was worried about more reactions, like those of the couple who ran the pub in Roseby, briefly trying to imagine what he might have done to have caused them, then wishing she hadn't.
I wish I could. I drove all the way over here because my sister told me to come. In fact, she said it was an excellent idea. But now that I'm here, I doubt it very much.
I didn't know you had a sister, Grace said, pleased that he had shared this small confidence with her.
I have 4 of them, Grace,
Ben replied.
And 3 are in there right now, along with my mother, who hasn't spoken to me for 14 years, and who still isn't ready to talk to me now.
Grace's mouth dropped open as her mind began clicking things into place.
Meredith,
she breathed, unable to believe it.
Yes, Grace,
Ben said.
Meredith,
is my mother.
Chapter 23. Grace was stunned, but as she sat beside Ben, with no idea of what to say next, she caught sight of two people standing on the front steps to the hall, looking around while they talked agitatedly. Ben had spotted them too.
You'd better go.
Will you be okay? He turned to smile at her, though his eyes were weary.
I'm fine, Grace. You go now. I'll see you tomorrow.
She gave him a worried glance, climbed out of the car, and heard him reversing down the road. She waited a moment, then began to walk up to the hall. James and Annabel swooped on her as soon as they saw her. Annabel was beside herself, declaring that the party was definitely over and they were heading back.
Don't you ever do that to me again, she shouted at Grace. Where the hell have you been?
I needed some time to myself, Grace told them. Grateful that the music from inside was drowning out their remonstrations, and reluctant to tell them that she had been with Ben, knowing they were likely to read it all wrong. They walked to the car in silence. Once inside, Annabel refused to speak to Grace for the rest of the journey. Grace looked to James for support, but he stared stonily ahead as he drove and made no move to dispel the fraught atmosphere. Grace glanced out the window, exhaustion creeping over her. The roads heading home were disturbingly hushed. The headlights' full beam did their best to penetrate the black night, but to little effect. It was hard to believe it was Christmas Day. She had a suspicion that when they got up again in a few hours, it would feel more like going through the motions than a true celebration. She remembered Ben, standing outside the hall tonight, so close and yet so far removed from the rest of his family. What on earth had happened to make it that way? She was tempted to share her discoveries. It might thaw the frostiness in the car. But stopped herself, feeling she would be betraying Ben's confidence. He would tell them about it himself if he wanted to. At least his revelation had distracted her from thoughts of Adam for a while. People were saying we're in for a heavy snowfall tomorrow, James said beside her, breaking her train of thought. Good job you stocked up today, then, Grace responded, after which they said nothing further. Grace was relieved when the Roseby Village sign flashed by them. As they pulled up outside the cottage, she remembered Millie with a guilt-laden jolt. How could she have left her alone out here? What if something had gone wrong and Millie had needed her? She hurried inside and found Emma lazing sleepily on the sofa, the television burbling in the background.
Not a peep, she reassured Grace. I hope you had a good time.
Grace said her thanks and saw Emma out. Then she crept into Millie's room, peeked briefly at her daughter's peaceful, sleeping face, whispered, Happy Christmas, little one, and took herself off to bed. When Grace woke up, she was pleased to discover that it had been a rare night without dreams. Her head felt groggy, however, and a dull ache began as she remembered what Liza had told her about Adam. She went in to see Millie and found her standing, holding the bars of the crib, cuddling Mr. Pink while eyeing her full stocking in the corner with a mixture of wonder and apprehension. Grace gave Millie a few presents to open. They had only gotten as far as unwrapping a board book and a jigsaw puzzle when the little girl began to lose interest, and Grace smiled as her daughter grabbed Mr. Pink, threw him ahead of her, and crawled towards the door. As they were going downstairs, Annabel appeared and headed towards the bathroom. Merry Christmas, Grace said, but Annabel just grunted. James was already up and drinking coffee at the kitchen table. I'm sorry if I scared you last night, Grace began as soon as she saw him.
Never mind. As long as you're all right.
I am. Though I don't know if Annabel will be talking to me today.
Now, don't be too hard on Annabel,
James said.
Remember, Adam went missing around here, so when you go MIA...
She worries. She's bound to. Grace felt chastened. James looked like he wanted to add something more. But then Annabelle appeared.
Merry Christmas,
she greeted them, hugging them all before going across to the kettle.
When are we opening presents?
As soon as possible, I think, Grace replied, relieved that she appeared to have been forgiven. She jiggled Millie on her hip, then poked her tongue out to encourage her daughter to laugh.
Come on then, little lady,
Annabelle plucked her niece from Grace's arms.
Let's go and see what we can find under the tree.
They spent the next couple of hours opening presents. Annabelle's selections were always interesting. Creme de la mer for Grace.
It's so overpriced, but I'm saving your skin from cracking up in these Arctic temperatures.
While James received Ted Baker boxer shorts, which he looked quite pleased with, until he saw that the label said extra large.
I thought you'd take it as a compliment,
Annabelle laughed when he complained. Grace had bought Annabelle some Smythson business accessories and a pair of pyjamas, but had to apologise to James as he opened his gift.
In my defence, I didn't know you were coming. In haste, she had managed to locate an empty photo frame and make a collage to go in it by scanning old pictures onto the computer. James beamed at her after he opened it. A decade of Grace, James, and Annabelle. Don't worry. It's perfect.
Despite her considerable pile of presents, Millie wasn't much interested in the unwrapping process. James had given her Mr. Men stories and tried in vain to get her to sit with him while he read. But Millie's face grew increasingly wary and she kept crawling close to her mother. In the end, he gave up and began to help Annabelle prepare the dinner while Grace took the new toys out of their boxes. By the time Millie went down for her nap, there was nothing much left to do. James switched on the television, and he and Annabelle settled themselves in front of it. Grace tried to join them, but she couldn't concentrate, thinking about Liza's and Ben's revelations the previous night. She sat there for a while feeling fidgety, then got up. I might go for a quick walk.
You and your walks,
Annabelle said absently. Her eyes fixed on the television.
Just don't disappear for hours this time.
Want me to come?
James asked, and looked half relieved and half disappointed when Grace replied,
No, it's fine. I won't be long. Just need a bit of fresh air.
Millie shouldn't be up for at least another hour or so, but listen out for her, will you? She went into the hallway, pulled on her wellies, collected her jacket, gloves, and hat, and headed out. The sky was a strange colour, almost yellow, and she sensed that the fresh snowfall they'd been warned about wasn't far away. She inhaled deeply, smelling the frosty grass and wet tarmac, feeling the cold air surging down her throat. At the top of the hill, she turned off the road and made her way along a path of mud and flattened grass, skirting around the edge of dry stone walls. When she reached the familiar large flat stones, she sat there for a while, taking in the view. She looked across towards Lover's Leap, remembering Annabelle describing it as the most haunted place on the moors. Then her mind returned again to the previous night and Liza's urgent voice as she had confessed to Grace in the shadows of the lake. She pictured Adam at a library computer, trying to trace his father, and knew she couldn't sit on this information. Grace was skeptical about rousing the police's interests with such a scant new lead, but they needed to know. Liza's name didn't have to come up unless they thought it was significant. Grace jumped up from the stone slab as an idea came to her. What was stopping her from finding Adam's father herself? She could go to the library, try to retrace Adam's footsteps, and see what he might have uncovered. At least then she would have an idea of what he might have been going to tell her, the thing he'd referred to in his mysterious note. She felt reinvigorated by this new sense of purpose, looking towards the sky and taking a few deep breaths. As she did so,
The first specks of snow landed on her, sticking to her clothes and gloves. She kept her face upturned, flakes appearing out of the void above her in a soft white flurry. She spun around slowly, catching them on her tongue, feeling their frozen, gentle caress on her skin in the brief moment before they vanished. A dog began barking nearby, and a voice said,
"Having fun?"
Ben stood a short distance away, wearing a padded coat, beanie, and thick gloves. Bess was by his side, her tail wagging.
"Yes, I am,"
she said, smiling, feeling a glow of fresh colour suffuse her cheeks.
"Merry Christmas, Grace."
He came closer, until she could see small specks of snow clinging to the stubble on his chin. "Merry Christmas," she replied, recalling him leaning over her in his car a few hours ago. It felt like a distant memory.
"What are you doing out here?"
he asked. "Oh, getting some fresh air and having a think. We all walked up here the other day, and Annabelle was telling us your stories about Lover's Leap." She gestured beyond the railway line. "Is it really the most haunted spot around here, or were you having her on?"
"A bit of both, really."
There was a glimmer of amusement in his eyes.
"It is notorious, but the ghost stories are ancient. It's all cuckolded husbands and distressed maidens. I've spent more time there than most, and I've never seen a ghost."
"Really?" she asked. "And what were you doing there?"
"Dealing with my teenage angst," he laughed. "It's an easy place to get to from the schoolhouse. There's a path that goes straight there, called the Monk's Trod. They're all over the moors. Centuries ago, the monks used them to navigate, and they were also known by smugglers bringing in contraband from the coast. The path eventually connects with this one. For a while, Claire and I would go and sit dangling our feet over the edge to smoke and complain about our family. We've always been close, although I'd stopped going there by the time Claire began taking Adam along. My next bolt hole was one of the ruined workers' houses. By that time, life was turning a bit more serious for me."
He lost the smile, and as he gazed into the distance, Grace could tell that his thoughts were elsewhere. He looked back and paused, as though debating what to say. In the end, he said nothing, and as she met his eyes, she felt slightly off balance.
"I should be getting back," she said. "I know a shortcut. I'll show you."
He began to walk away. She hesitated, her mind still attuned to their conversation. She wondered what had turned him so somber, and felt a fleeting sense of disappointment that he hadn't confided in her. Ben turned around.
"Are you coming?"
"Yes," she replied hastily, snapping out of her trance and following him. The snow's gentle fall was deceptive. Before long, it flew heedlessly into her eyes, melted into cold drips that ran down her face and soaked through her jeans. The journey seemed to be taking forever, when halfway along the path by the stone wall, they passed a gate. Ben stopped.
"Let's go through the field,"
he suggested, rubbing his hands together as though to warm them.
"It's so much faster."
He clambered over the gate.
"Come on, Bess,"
he shouted, and the dog immediately bounded up onto the wall and down the other side. Both of them turned to look at Grace.
"Come on, then,"
Ben urged.
"Isn't this trespassing?"
she asked, as she grasped the gate and started to climb, feeling awkward as she tried to swing her leg elegantly over the top, an impossible feat while wearing wellies.
"Only if they see you," Ben replied. "And I don't think anyone else